My guest today is Cindy Laura Renard. She's coming on this podcast for a third time. And I just want to add some more information about Cindy and the incredible work that she's been doing. During the last few years, Cindy has been very busy and sometimes introducing A Course in Miracles in more than 20 countries and over 40 states, with multiple visits to many of those countries and states. She's done hundreds of radio and print interviews, appeared in several documentaries, recorded over 30 podcasts, and has multiple videos on YouTube, has several recorded audio and music CDs, including Meditations for Couples, Awakening to Love's Presence through Partnership. You can find out more information about Cindy's work at www.cindylaura.com. Cindy wrote two books, The Business of Forgiveness and A Course in Well-Being. She is a remarkable human being, and there's so much wisdom there. And as I sit here today quietly, I can't help but think of the one message that she's been trying to pass along for years. And that is, we are all spirit, whole, pure, and innocent. And love is all that we are, perfect love. And this life of ours, seemingly unfolding, is nothing but an opportunity to remove the blocks to the awareness of this love's presence in our lives. If the eye is unobstructed, they say, the result is sight. If the ear is unobstructed, the result is hearing. But what about the mind? What happens when my mind is unobstructed? The result is wisdom. Wisdom is not something acquired, is not experience, and is definitely not applying yesterday's illusions to today's problems. What happens if the heart is unobstructed? The result is love. That's what Cindy does. She teaches people how to abandon their obstructions, which are impediments to love's constant presence in our lives. So without further delay, you can see why I'm so deeply grateful and so excited to be able to learn from Cindy again and present to you for a third time our guest today, Cindy Laura Renard. So let's engage in a conversation about non-duality and a course in a shift in perception. Welcome, everyone. Cindy, welcome to another podcast. How did Kenneth call it? Healing in the Dream of Sickness.
Yes. Healing, it's a very powerful subject.
It is. It is indeed. So let's get the conversation going. I was thinking today about... I received numerous comments, beautiful comments from course students about the podcast and the conversations that you and I have been having. And I see a common thread among some of them where people, there's so much goodness and love in their hearts. You know, they found a path that is theirs to walk and they want to change people. They want to talk to people in their lives that have cancer, family members that have cancer, friends of friends that have cancer. And they want to change them. They want to make them happy. And it's an interesting situation here because, you know, you can't make anybody be happy. People choose to be happy in their own time. It's like trying to make a giraffe to sing. I mean, you'll fail terribly and the giraffe will be very irritated.
Yeah.
Yet we do want to change. We want to help people have a change in mind. We want to help people experience a miracle, which is a change in mind. Let's talk about that.
Oh, it's a really wonderful way to start this conversation. Coming back to the mind, which I always love to do. And no matter what the conversation, forgiveness at the level of the mind is always the answer. But you made a good point about how I think all of us to some degree feel we want to change people. We want to have them feel maybe what we feel or the joy we feel, or we want to try to comfort them in a way, though, where the intention is good, but I think sometimes it starts from a faulty premise, and I'll explain why. When we try to change people or their circumstances, I think first and foremost, it's always about remembering that putting cause and effect in its proper place, that you change the world or people not by physically doing anything. You don't have to do anything to change the world or people. What we want to do is work at our in our mind, change our mind about the people we are experiencing. We want to change our mind about them, not the other way around. We want to see people as God created them, not as the ego mind made them and made ourselves. We always want to remember that according to A Course in Miracles, and Jesus is the voice of the Course, he's always reminding us really gently. He talks about level confusion, that oftentimes we keep trying to change things in the world or fix people. Even when they're sick, we try to fix them. Even ourselves, we try to fix our symptoms. So what he's trying to get us to understand is that there's one symptom, only one, that we really need correct, which when we do that, it will have an effect, sometimes effects we can't see, but it will have a benefit to the mind. And that's the symptom of guilt that we want to work with at the mind level, which is really the only symptom, according to the Course, that needs correction. Mm-hmm. And when we correct that symptom, which is in the mind, and again, the guilt comes over is because of the belief. Again, it's a belief that we truly are not as God created us, that we're separate from our source. And when we really believe that, we're reinforcing this guilt, which can manifest itself in all kinds of symptoms. And it'll appear as symptoms in the body. But what we're learning in A Course in Miracles is that the body itself is a symptom of the mind's decision for guilt. And when we really get that, this is how true healing can take place. There's a part in the Course where Jesus emphasizes that and says, if we truly understood the cause-effect relationship, that mind is always cause, and then the world and the body would be included in that is the effect, we can start to address the true problem. Again, which is that the only thing that needs correction, which is, again, the symptom of guilt in the mind that we bring to the Holy Spirit for healing. And when we do that, and then we do that through forgiveness, choosing the miracle, which is this shift in perception, which changes our perception from what we believe ourselves to be, a body that's separate from each other and from God. And we bring that symptom to the Holy Spirit's correction, which is, you've never left God. You're always innocent. You're always whole. You are perfect. And all we need to do is forgive this belief, you know, in ourselves that we're guilty because we think we really did something terrible by separating from pure love, our source. Once we really forgive that and work with forgiveness, sometimes the symptoms in the body that are manifest can go away. Sometimes the symptoms in the body, which is really in the mind still, they might not go away, but that doesn't mean the mind isn't healed, because the Course explains that only perception can be sick. I mean, that's a big one right there. Yeah. Only perception can be sick, because only perception can be wrong. So this is not to say, we again, like we've talked about before.
It's about the thinking.
And it doesn't mean we, like we've talked about before, it doesn't mean we're not going to be normal and go to the doctor and do what we need to do. So we're not saying that. We're just saying, when you understand that the cause is always mind, and you can change your thinking about yourself and what's happening in your life, when you do that, and start learning to think with the whole, like how the Holy Spirit would think, which we call the right part of the mind, seeing yourself with correct perception as you really are, as God created you, that is more powerful in healing than trying to just heal a physical symptom, which is not really the cause.
This is such a good point that you're making. This is such a good and important point that you're making. And what I hear you say, Cindy, is that the finest act of love that we can perform may not necessarily be an act of service, but an act of contemplation, of seeing yourself and your brother for who they really are, for who you really are. When you serve people, you support, you can relieve pain. But when you see people for who they really are, for the perfect spirit that they are in their divinity, that spirit whole and innocent that you so perfectly talk about, that's when you come closer to God. That's when you love truly. And that's probably the biggest act of love.
Totally agree with that. And you're right on. That is the point. That's the point. It's how we're healing is first being clear that we're in our right mind for to begin with, for starters, as we're watching the world, watching, observing ourselves and others. If we're doing that, making the first and most important choice we can make when we're doing that, which is choosing the right mind, a right-minded way of seeing, then that's our starting point. When that's our starting point, we're just then a presence of love for others. That's how Jesus really healed. It wasn't his hands that healed. If there's really no body, how can his hands be the thing that was healing? Yes, he appeared to maybe place his hands on people, but that's not what the cause of the true healing was. He was a demonstration of love. His presence was that of a connected being, connected to source, as God created him, and demonstrating this pure, loving presence, which when people come into that presence, they're healed. If they can accept that love, then they're healed. But it's always the who's really the healer. It's the mind of the patient is the healer. They have that much power. They're the healer with the Holy Spirit's help. But people can be facilitators of healing, like Jesus, as an example, could help facilitate that by reminding people, by joining with their mind, by reminding them of what they are, the truth about them. Mm-hmm. That's what heals. You know, it's not really bodies that heal. You know, mm-hmm. We're joining heals. Sickness is separation. Healing is joining. And so when we join with another's mind by thinking of them with spiritual sight, as you said, perfect spirit, whole and innocent. And it doesn't require much more than that, because all expressions of love are maximal. So that the Holy Spirit will take your offering of love, whatever healing, and you don't have to keep repeating that. It's just that one intention that you have to be in that loving space for someone. And that intention that you're holding is enough. It's enough. And this is what Jesus was demonstrating. He was reminding people at the mind level of what they are. And when you come into that kind of presence, if you're accepting that healing, sometimes people, the mind is frightened. It won't accept that right away. But when you are ready to accept it, then you're healed. And that means often that actual symptoms can disappear. But I don't think we should use that as a meter to determine, like, if you have a body symptom, the mind can still be healed, yet still exhibit some symptoms at this level. So I think I want to encourage people that it doesn't mean you're not making progress. If you're doing this mental work we're talking about and practicing forgiveness and doing the best you can, that doesn't go unnoticed. A miracle's never lost. And when you're working and training the mind, you know, to see yourself differently, to forgive our illusory perceptions about ourselves and others. That's not lost. You know, that miracle And that healing will be accepted. The mind will accept that when it's ready, including our own minds. It will accept the healing when it's ready. And we need to be patient with ourselves. And if someone right now listening to this podcast is having a difficult time with, maybe it is cancer or some form of cancer or pain in any form. We're not saying sometimes things just vanish and the pain might disappear, but I can assure you that if you're turning everything over to the Holy Spirit, and you're trusting that you're not doing this on your own, you're not going through this on your own, and you're trusting that there's a higher part of you that is a wise, powerful being and teacher. You could call it your higher self. The Course calls it the Holy Spirit. When you're always in touch with that, and the best you can, there's nothing else you really have to do, because you can trust and let go of any outcomes, because we don't know what's best. You can trust that everything is going to unfold. I always like to say for the highest good, for the highest good of all concerned, because I don't know what's best. Mm-hmm. If I get an illness of some kind, my job would be, well, what is the purpose of this? And what purpose can I use it for? First, I'm clear on what purpose is this serving. I kind of put it back on myself so I don't feel like I'm a victim of it. Mm-hmm. What I ask myself, what is the purpose? Was it bringing me? Mm-hmm. Why is this
question right away?
You question it. Yeah. Questioning it puts it back on you, because it puts you in charge of your own state of mind, your own healing. It reminds you that you're always choosing how you can perceive something. Mm-hmm. And you can always use something to your advantage, no matter what it is. Even if it's cancer, it can be used for the Holy Spirit's purpose, mm-hmm. instead of ego's purpose.
Right.
And how do you know you're not being you can be a powerful teacher for others and be a powerful demonstration that the cancer is not you. It's not what you are. Even if you have the symptoms of cancer, it's still not your, you don't have to identify with it as your reality.
Right. The problem is not, it's not the body, right. It's not the cancer.
It's not cancer.
Thinking is mm-hmm. my thinking.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because if we find ourselves in a position of already having some kind of illness, well, you might as well, why not use it in the highest way you could use it? Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that's always easy. I've had very challenging body issues in my life too. I didn't have cancer, but the body issues took a different form. But in my personal experience, it was difficult to go through some things that I was going through, and it was kind of scary. So I was doing the same things I'm talking with you about now. I started to question more and ask myself, Holy Spirit, actually, I said, Holy Spirit, help me to use this for your purposes and not my own. I may not know what it looks like exactly. I don't have to have everything figured out. But help me not to be attached to outcomes or results. Just help me to see this in myself correctly with your perception. It made me feel so much better, because I wasn't assuming that I knew what was best for me. I wasn't demanding that I be healed at the physical level. I just said, help me to use this, help my mind to be healed so I can perceive myself correctly, so I can see this with peace. That's actually all that really mattered to me. I just wanted to be at peace. And so I practiced that by forgiving myself for any beliefs that I was holding that kept me further rooted in the dream that I was a body, making that my reality. And I'll tell you, that really did help lift the fear, lift anxiety, lift. And I remembered I was dreaming. These are all things that I really sincerely was practicing. I'm dreaming that I'm this body that is experiencing this challenge, but it's still not my reality. It's not me. So I was practicing not identifying with it. Doesn't mean I wasn't taking care of myself. I definitely was doing my best to make myself feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I was doing things, using magic, taking vitamins, doing things that you would normally do to take care of yourself. I was doing all of that, but I wasn't buying into it. In other words, I was still practicing perceiving myself as the Holy Spirit would perceive me.
Yeah.
Which is outside of time and space, as perfect spirit, whole and innocent. And the more I was doing that, I found just a tremendous strength in me coming out and through me, where I realized, no, there's no cause for guilt. And the guilt is the cause of all symptoms of that manifest in the body. So I would tell myself, if there's no world, this is how my logic, if there's no world, which means there's no body, and nothing really happened, and we didn't separate from God's love, and that's an illusion, how could I be guilty? It doesn't even make sense. There's no cause for guilt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's so silly, I thought, for me to hold on to this, even if the guilt is unconscious. I was helping myself get in touch with the silly to hold on to it. Any symptom of guilt, the symptom of guilt that's causing this experience, is kind of silly. There's no more use for this for me. I don't need to hold on to this. And I would tell myself those things. And then I could tell that I started to feel better when I did that.
Yeah.
More empowered.
So you got closer to reality by questioning your perceptions. And this is, I think, a very important point for our listeners, is that really the biggest obstacle to finding God, to finding peace, to embracing our reality and removing those obstacles to this awareness of who we really are, is our concept of God. The biggest obstacle to find is our concept of God. Mm-hmm. And I remember when Kenneth was alive, him talking to Alzena at a very young age. He started telling her, Alzena, make sure you listen. He knew that she was training to become an accomplished pianist at that time. And she was training intensely. She was taking lessons, theory lessons, and practice lessons. And he kept insisting, but you really have to listen. I remember in his first visit here, he told her, and I remember looking at him and being somewhat surprised, because I said, I'm not sure how much she understands this, you know? And then, but he kept telling her, are you listening? Are you truly listening? And he was talking about this idea of the melody behind the words. And it wasn't until, I think Alzena was, she was 12 years old, and I took her to the opera for the first time. Mm. A colleague of mine gave me tickets and we went to the opera. And the symphony started playing. And just before the actors started singing, she closed her eyes, looked at me. It was a very powerful moment for us. And she said, Mommy, I got it. Mm-hmm. So, honey, what did you get? Mommy, Kenneth was trying to tell me all this time not to listen with my musical training mind, get past that, what I call conditioning. I used to tell her we're conditioned into doing a lot of things. You know, we teach ourselves that those behaviors, and we start believing that we are those behaviors and those acts of ways of being, ways of thinking, ways of feeling. And she said, I got to go beyond that. And she closed her eyes and she said, Mommy, this is so powerful. When I'm able to do that, this is so powerful. And I looked at her with tears in my eyes, because I said, honey, it is, isn't it? When you're able to really close your eyes, even for a mere second, and really listen, get yourself out of the way and really listen, it's overwhelming just how powerful that is. And that's no different to what we were talking about earlier, about the finest act of love is when you engage in true seeing.
Beautiful. The essence behind it all. I heard someone once say, it's like listening with your third ear.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because it's not with the body's ears. It's not what you're taking in, what you've been trained to hear. It's listening with the power of truth behind it, the essence. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And another example, the other day we had a group of, I believe about 25 men. I'm engaged in this program that is aimed at improving the lives of men facing prostate cancer and going through treatment and right now. And it's a very interesting situation because these are all men. Here I am, I'm a woman. I'm a woman researcher talking to them about quality of life issues. And most of the time I engage myself in service, meaning what information can I provide them with that are practical solutions to dealing with their situation. But the other day, things went differently. And I was in a very contemplative mood. And so I started seeing them for who they are without attachment with and expressing that, which is could be a little awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at your patients and saying, just appreciating just how common, the commonality, the humanity in us all. And there was a very precious moment that happened as a result of that. Is this realization? I mean, at the very fundamental level, right, Cindy, we all realize just how much more alike we are than different.
Yeah.
When that happens, absolutely. That's very powerful.
Very powerful. That's a perfect example of joining, you know, with another, with shared interests, as the Course says. In other words, we're all the same. We're, like you said, we're way more alike than we are different. This is something I would say to our Course students in our workshops, no matter where we were in the world, whatever country, China, Japan, I would always say, you know, we're all so much more alike than we are different. It has nothing to do with appearances. It has nothing to do with even our cultures. At the core of who we are, we're the same, you know, and we share same concerns. I found this all over the world with all people, all cultures, doesn't matter. Same concerns.
Wow.
Same, you know, ability to love and be loved, same, right? Same things that hurt us, same thing. There's no difference at the core, at our core. Nothing to do with how you're raised or anything like that. You know, when we can see humanity, see people as, I always like to remember what the Course says, it's all one category. All of us are the same because all of us are either calling out for love or expressing love. And that's why we're the same. It might look different in form of how we call for love or how we even express love can look different, but we're always doing one of those two things, no matter where you come from.
Yeah.
You know, and we're the same in that regard. So when we can join with someone at that level and just hear their call, if they're not expressing it, just hear the call for love. And when we're in our right minds, we'll be able to answer that call in the most appropriate, loving form. It would just come through us and extend through us naturally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why the focus should always be inward, not outward to correct, to fix.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing to fix.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Spirit will correct through us as we choose the Holy Spirit. Nothing to fix. Like, it makes people think, I think they're broken somehow, and we feel we have to do something to fix them. No, everything is perfect. Mm-hmm. And we just need to allow the love of the Holy Spirit, though, extend through us. So we will do naturally whatever's most loving. I mean, just that would just naturally be extended. Yeah. As we get in our own right mind.
Get your treatment, go, you know.
Yeah.
Take your pills and.
Sure.
You know, the role of magic has its place.
Yes, right? It does.
We all do it. We exercise well. We
live
in healthy lifestyles.
Yeah. That's important, too, to not neglect that. I mean, so we're definitely not saying we should deny the being practical. Mm-hmm. Just doing what you feel is you're inspired to do that will help you feel more comfortable. I've never, ever given up. I've sacrificed myself in that way where I have to feel like I have to give up magic, what we are calling magic. If someone's not familiar with that, magic in the Course is any outside agent that takes the form of helping us, like taking a vitamin or a aspirin, whatever form, you know, of healing. Getting a massage. That's what the Course calls magic because it's an outside agent attempting to heal ourselves. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing those things. And that's what we're talking about. You can still do those things and not have to give anything up. Yet just always remember that mind is cause, though, and that we're not saying like some kind of pill is really what heals us. It's not the pill that does that. But it can give form to our beliefs that it does, and it can still be helpful because we believe that these things help and they work. And so they probably will because we believe that they will. But we want to just remember that we want to go to the cause of the root cause of all suffering is found in the mind. Always, because there's only mind. You know, there really is only mind. And all symptoms of the body are still being watched from another level. At the mind level, we're watching ourselves. And so we're observing ourselves as bodies having these symptoms. When you really get that, it's actually very refreshing, in my opinion, because it means we're not really here as bodies experiencing what we're experiencing. We're experiencing it in the mind, just as the mind is what is seeing, the mind hears, the mind is what thinks. It's not the brain that does that. It doesn't mean that we need to stop our careers or jobs that study the brain, but it's still helpful, I think, to know that everything we're doing with the mind and not the body, because then we have, we're saying that we have, that's where our true power always is. We have the power to think differently about what's happening in the body, you know, and we can, that's bring back to cause, which is our power. The Course emphasizes that over and over again, you know.
Yeah.
How, again, always putting cause and effect in its proper place. And when we do that, then we can really, really get to the root of all suffering. And that's powerful. That's powerful. The world is an outside picture of an inward condition. So the body is part of the world. So the body is also an outside picture of an inward condition. And the inward condition is what you choose it to be. That's what's so interesting. The condition is we can choose the ego's perspective or the Holy Spirit's, and whichever we choose will produce an outcome. I mean, we will experience it how according to how we're choosing it in the mind, who we're choosing it with, to perceive ourselves with. And so if we're thinking with the ego, well, that's painful because the ego is all about separation and, you know, sin, guilt, and fear. What Ken would talk about as the unholy trinity, of sin, guilt, and fear, as opposed to the real trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And those things aren't really separate. Even Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, it's still really one. You know, we can't be separate from, even as Christ, we can't be separate from our source, from God, but we need to have some way of seeing ourselves and thinking about ourselves and putting ourselves in perspective. So that's why the A Course in Miracles uses those ideas like Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, because we need to be able to have a way of finding where we fit in with all this. But to really get that, we're not a separate identity than God itself. We're not really separate. That is an experience. You know, everyone will experience revelation, which they'll come to that understanding that nothing happened. They never truly separated from God. That will come to each mind when every mind is ready and for that experience. Yeah. And we don't have to worry about that. And that's the beauty of this. There's no one keeping score. There's no need to rush through the process of undoing the ego. And the only difference is the more you do practice forgiveness, and as you're working on undoing the ego, you just suffer less. You don't have to suffer, or your suffering may not last as long, or the grievances we may hold, we start to experience them. There's less emphasis on them, or they don't last as long, you know, and that's not a small thing.
No.
That's a small thing.
Yeah, that's why to know and not do is not to yet know.
Yeah.
You need to practice this. I need to practice this. I need to remember to choose again. I need to remember that I do have a mind. It's really interesting and almost paradoxical to me, Cindy, that in one way, you know, we teach our ups and downs, lefts and rights, our perceptions, feelings, we distinguish them from one. We create this whole world of perception. Yeah. And we believe it, we buy in it until something almost has to happen to jolt us into forcing us into questioning. Is there another way to look at this? Mm-hmm. Can I look at this differently? Mm-hmm. I mean, A Course in Miracles is really a course in a shift in perception. Might as well call it that. Yeah. A course in a shift of perception. The biggest gift you can give someone when they are ready to listen, because people are going to choose in their own time when they're ready. It's not my business to push them into the light or push them into thinking one way or another. Besides, like I said, it's just like teaching a giraffe how to sing. What a waste of my time. Yeah. Giraffe will be really irritated, right? So it's a shift in perception. And when we're ready, when we're ready, that's where the message is going to get to us some way or another, be it through the Course in Miracles or be it through something else. Mm-hmm. We just so happen to be subscribed to the Course in Miracles. I just absolutely adore it. I mean, it's music to my ears. It's no different than that beautiful symphony and opera that Azena and I listened when she was 12 years old. You know, you sit there and when you really, truly get yourself out of the way.
Yeah,
you hear it. You have that moment, and from there onwards, you can never look at your own perception and the world that you've made the same way again.
That's it. Never will look at the world the same way again. You know, when you were talking about how this course could be called a shift in course and shift in perception.
Yeah.
Can I want to read something, one brief paragraph from the course.
Yes. I love when you do that.
And it says, this is perfect. This is under the Manual for Teachers section, number 5, How is Healing Accomplished?
Oh.
Paragraph 3 says, What is the single requisite for this shift in perception? What is it, right? This is right what we're talking about. It says, it is simply this, right? What is the prerequisite for the shift in perception? It is simply this, the recognition that sickness is of the mind and has nothing to do with the body. What does this recognition cost? It costs the whole world you see, for the world will never again appear to rule the mind. For with this recognition is responsibility placed where it belongs. Not with the world, but on him who looks on the world and sees it as it is not. He looks on what he chooses to see, no more and no less. The world does nothing to him. He only thought it did. Nor does he do anything to the world because he was mistaken about what it is. Herein is the release from guilt and sickness both, for they are one. Yet to accept this release, the insignificance of the body must be an acceptable idea. The insignificance of the body. This is blasphemy to the ego who thinks, what do you mean the insignificance of the body? The body is important. It's real, right? And here Jesus is saying, at no single instant does the body exist at all. He's telling us it's insignificant because it's an effect. It's an effect. It's not cause. This is powerful stuff when we get in touch with it, Now, this doesn't come all at once to our mind. It's not accepted all at once to our minds. So it's okay if there's resistance to this. There's going to be resistance to this, but it can be overcome through starting to gently practice what we're talking about, shifting your perception from body identification, ego identification, to spirit identification.
Yeah. You know? Well, the body identification is propaganda for the self.
Yes.
But the ego made self. Go self. Go self.
Yeah.
Your body.
Yeah. Right. Right. We celebrate the body.
Don't look there.
Celebrate.
Don't look
right.
At the idea. Yeah. Yeah. Don't look at the decision maker.
Yeah. It's like, what mind? Forget we told the body, you know, that's the purpose for the world. Purpose of the body to forget that we have a mind. This is totally different than what we've been taught. So no wonder there's going to be some resistance to it at first. Until, you know, the more these ideas are accepted in the mind and practiced day in and day out, takes practice. But it will become more and more your reality the more you trust in this process by giving it over, give everything over. You know, we don't have to do this on our own. Yeah. You know?
I'll tell you another story.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago, a friend of ours, he's been diagnosed with a brain tumor. It was terminal. The tumor came back, and he was very close to passing, crossing, transcending. And we went over for a visit. He didn't go into the hospice at that time. He was still at home. A few days later, he ended up in the hospice. And I decided to crawl into his lap. I crawled into his lap and I put my head on his lap. And he started petting me like a little girl. And I started laughing. And he looked at me and he said, "God, why does this feel almost like a joke?" And I looked at him and I said, "Because it is a joke." I said, "It is a joke, isn't it?" And he said, "I know. I feel intact. I feel the same. I feel I am."
Oh.
How powerful.
Wow, that's powerful.
I feel I am. This man was dying and he said, clearly, there is a, you know, the emperor, there's a big blasphemy here. There's something doesn't make sense. I am.
Right. Right. It's like we naturally have an ability to get in touch with that part, that power in ourselves to know that there's something greater. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yes.
What was happening is that he somehow knew intuitively that, look, this is not all there is. This is silly. This is not me. This is not. This situation is not me. I mean, none of this is me.
Yeah.
And I think all of us, of course, we definitely all of us have that connection to this greater awareness.
Yeah. 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 About 10 years ago, I was a professor at University of Toronto. At that time, I was teaching a course in the psychology of music. And I was asked to take over a colleague of mine who I was told he had an accident. It was a snowy day. He was in his 80s, fell down, hit his head, got a traumatic brain injury, quite a severe one. And he was immobilized. He was in the ICU, and I knew that was not good news. But it was part of my prerogative to talk. If I'm going to take over somebody's course, I want to know, what did they want? What's their goal? You know, I could never be them. So I guess I wanted to be truly helpful and find out what their goal was so that I can be truly helpful. And I asked to talk to him on the phone. He had lost his ability to speak at that time. So the part of the brain that got injured in the process was his ability to produce speech. Mm-hmm. So his speech was really mumbo jumbo when he picked up the phone to talk to me. And really, he could not finish a sentence. I could hear the willingness to want to speak to me. I introduced myself. I said who I was. But there was nothing at the other end. And so he decided to be silent. Instead, I met him with silence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, "Doug, you're still in there, aren't you?" And he responded with tears and he said, "Yes, yes." And I said, "This must be so frustrating for you. Because you want to have a conversation the way you would if this didn't happen to you." I knew it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
None of who he is got touched except his body.
Yeah.
So imagine how frustrating this is. But people, we know. What I'm trying to say is that we all know.
Yeah.
And you hear this repeatedly from people whose bodies, yeah, sure, as a body, you can harm me. Oh, my gosh, you can kill me. You can kill this body. This body is very fragile. But you can never touch me.
Yeah. And that's exhibiting true empathy to me. What you're just, you being with him also in that presence, just being truly present with him is true empathy. Your ability to feel compassion, but without identifying with him as a body. That's true empathy, what you were doing with him. Mm. And you reached him too at that level that helped even maybe bring even that, maybe that out in him by just understanding and just not having to fix him or do anything specific, just joining with him with compassion. That's what I'm hearing in this experience, which is so healing. That's part of healing, being able to have this kind of empathy with people, which is different than sympathy. Empathy is the ability to have compassion, but without being drawn into pain.
Mm.
You're just sharing, you're joining, in truth, not and with understanding. But so that is a beautiful example of empathy in action, compassion in action.
That was a light post in my life, that moment of recognition. His recognition was my recognition.
Yeah.
If I was looking at myself, and we have that ability. And I think this is back to what I was saying. I think that's the greatest act of love.
Yeah.
Service, yes, but service is at the level of body, but to be able to truly see, to contemplate, to stay there, to be there and see your brother for who you really are and stay in that and connect with your brother at that level. Mm-hmm. That is true love. It's true love.
Yeah. That's the love that's unconditional. I mean, it's not the love of this world where it's based on conditions or judgments, right, of some kind. It's just letting go of all of that and transcending all of that and moving into a pure loving space when you're with someone. There's nothing more healing, more beautiful, more powerful than that. That's it. Nothing.
Rumi has a beautiful poem that says, beyond all the right doings and wrong doings, there is a pasture. The Course calls it above the battleground. And yeah. Rumi says, I'll meet you there.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes. Yeah, I'll meet you there. That's one of my favorite quotes. I heard someone say once too, in any situation, really, enlightenment is the ability to lighten up. Enlightenment is the ability to lighten up, but to not even, when you were just talking about how this person was even saying, this is like a joke or this isn't right. The ability to do that, to be able to say, this isn't even, it's almost silly. This is a joke. That's enlightening. That's an enlightening perspective. That's part of what it means to be enlightened, to have that kind of attitude. It's not like anything specifically has to change. Enlightenment is a recognition, not a change at all. It's a recognition, a simple recognition of truth, of what you are, what others are. It's this true, what we're talking about, this ability to be in this space of pure love, nothing else. Mm-hmm. And to be able to step back and actually be able to just see it that way, as almost like it's just silly to buy into this, like this is all of who I am, right? Or this so limited in these bodies, it's to be able to look at that with a very light perspective is being enlightened. That's actually, I've been practicing that more and more, even that idea of just saying so what to the ego. I mean, really, it doesn't have to be, everything doesn't have to be so hard and serious. It's a choice to make it hard and serious. It's a choice.
It is.
I've been literally saying that. So I say it to myself when I catch myself any state of mind that's less than love, I'll just go, oh, there, oh, I just slipped for a minute. Okay, so there's no cause for guilt. Doesn't mean I'm guilty of anything. So just replace it with the correction, or just I can choose again, think differently. But what if that's all that needs to be done? I think it's so easy to allow ourselves to keep further rooting ourselves and slipping into guilt over something we might have said or done or even feel. But if we remember there's no cause for guilt, the whole thing is silly. It's like a joke we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
I know it's easier said than done sometimes, but it can be done. It can be practiced. It's just with more practice, training the mind. It just takes mind training. Mind training.
Train to undo everything.
Undo everything we've been taught.
Exactly. The thoughts, they organize the world so well. And that's what Kenneth was trying to tell to Alzena, that thoughts can organize the world so well, conditioning through this music theory, through this and that and the other, that you're no longer able to perceive it. Mm-hmm. So so it's really interesting. It's like a message in the bottle.
Yeah.
Get past your conditioning. Truly listen. Truly listen. Get past your conditioning. Truly, what is it that you're being told? What's that whisper maybe sometimes? What's that voice, that minute little, tiny little voice that is telling you that you maybe are something different than what you taught yourself to believe in? Put that volume louder.
Yeah.
And ask yourself, say that again. And maybe, you know, if you don't believe in the Course in Miracles, you believe in whatever it is that you believe in, ask yourself, you know, talk to your higher self and say, talk to me in a manner that only I can accept and understand. And tell me again what you're trying to tell me, that I feel you're trying to tell me. That is the truth about who I am and what this journey is all about and what the name of the game is really.
Yeah, I have found a few questions have been so helpful that we can ask ourselves if we do find ourselves believing something that is holding us back, and it's these very limiting beliefs we have. One way to ask this question would be, what belief am I holding that is keeping me from being as God created me? Another way of asking is, what am I afraid might happen if I am as God created me? If I do understand I'm truly as God created me, what belief am I holding that might be holding me back from accepting that? Another way to ask it would be, well, what is the most loving thought I can hold right now in this very moment? That puts us in a position of inquiry. When we ask that question, what is the most loving thought I could be holding? It tells the mind that, wait, you're choosing, number one, and you can choose love. Right now, you might be choosing fear in some form. It's showing up as this belief that's limiting. But it just helps the mind to come back and remember that we're always choosing. We always have that power. And we can never lose control, because we're controlling our thoughts. If we're feel fearful, we're controlling that. So why can't we control our mind and direct the mind to choosing another point of view? Choosing love, we're controlling all of it. And so if we can control our belief system into feeling bad or fearful, of course, then logically speaking, we can train the mind just through practice, of course, but to start remembering, wait a minute, I'm controlling this, even how I feel. So I'm not really out of control, because I'm controlling how I'm thinking about this, which could be fearful. But look, I can use my mind, the power of my mind, and train it to start directing it toward the thought system of the Holy Spirit, which will help me think differently. So we always have control. We can feel out of control sometimes. And I have a lot of experience with feeling out of control.
Because so do I.
I really do. I mean, I do truly know what it feels like through anxiety to feel a sense of being out of control. And it's not fun to feel that. It's not fun to feel that. to feel you've lost yourself.
I agree.
It's terrible. I mean, now let's be honest here. I mean, it's terrible, you know. So I know, but I do know, part of my mind does know that I'm choosing that. There's some level, even if it's a deeply rooted belief, that's still a choice and I can choose again. So, you know, it's just, there is a way out of being in a feeling stuck in a situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's hope as well, because now if I know that I have a choice, right? If I know that, then suddenly I'm not so uptight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Suddenly it's okay to see myself slip and make the wrong choice.
Right.
Right. I see myself engaging more in forgiveness now and more into compassion, into looking myself as the young child that is growing. Now, you know, if you don't get mad at your own child in real life, then why would you get mad at yourself in the vision of a child? Just take it easy. The child is learning. The child is growing. The child is becoming aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's nice that you refer to it as child, because we're all like children here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're children of God, but we're children nonetheless. We're children. And that's when the Course speaks of children. I mean, it's speaking to us as like we are children, children of God. In other words, we don't want to assume that we know everything, that we have everything figured out. Be like little children. Don't assume we understand what anything means. So we should ask. Ask a teacher that represents a true teacher outside of time and space that does know who we are and sees us as we are. You know, that's powerful to be able to say, look, I don't be humble in that sense. Mm. I don't have everything figured out. And I don't have to. I really don't have to have it figured out.
Yeah.
That's pressure. That's unnecessary pressure on the self to also assume we should have things figured out, like every detail, every step, and even know what outcome is best.
Yeah.
That contributes to suffering and to pressure. It puts us in a state of joylessness because it's very hard on the self to try to be perfect and to think that you have to be perfect. And so joy comes from knowing that we don't need any of those things to be as God created us. We don't have to be perfect in regards to behavior. We're just in this classroom learning our lessons of forgiveness, learning that we already are truly forgiven. And we're just learning not to be guilty of anything, learning not to be guilty. But we do have to relearn. We've been poorly taught. So, I mean, this course goes as far as to say things like everything that you taught yourself is wrong. Everything. Let's ponder that for a minute. I mean, everything we taught ourselves here is wrong. To be able to just look at that and think about that for a little minute, you know, and then just start to eventually slowly and with patience allow ourselves to get back on track. Mm-hmm. And this is why I love A Course in Miracles, because it does give us a way to get back on track, to remember who we really are. And the way we do that is through forgiveness. It always comes back to forgiveness, true forgiveness, true forgiveness. From a place of cause, not effect. So that way we're always in charge of the world we see by how we're thinking about the world. Not that we're trying to change or fix the world, but we're just, or ourselves, we're just seeing it differently with a right-minded teacher, you know, the Holy Spirit.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said. Well, on that note, Cindy, I want to thank you again. Thank you for letting me learn from you, for allowing us all to learn from you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. And we look forward to another episode of Conversation.
Yes, we will definitely do another episode. And thank you for you're always amazing. You're equal part in this and your contributions. So if you're wonderful, helpful stories and examples and your demonstration of just being a total presence of innocence and love. I mean, I thank you for that. That comes across and through so powerfully. And I'm not just telling you this because we're talking on a recording. I mean, we've talked about this in private and how, and I mean that I tell you that in private, how much I appreciate you and that you always exude such a beautiful innocence and radiate such unconditional love. So thank you for that. I know people can feel that too.
Oh, love you. Thank you for being in my life. Thank you for being my friend. And it's so lovely to have this opportunity to share our conversations with everybody.
Yes. It's a beautiful thing we have going. I feel really good about it, just for its own sake. You know, I just feel good we're having these conversations.
And this concludes our interview with Cindy Laura Renard. To find out more about Cindy or to purchase one of her most recent books, The Business of Forgiveness, or A Course in Health and Well-Being, please visit her website at www.cindylaura.com. I'm looking forward to having Cindy again on this program and chatting more with her about cancer and survivorship and a new way of looking at it. Until then, be well and take care of yourselves.